This week in the Famicom Dojo podcast, does DLC cost too much when the price of the main game goes down? Future Retro is all about making fun of the very concept of DLC, and Pile of Shame has us really steamed. Sorry. Hey, Vang.
Hey, Sean.
Do you go to Reddit at all?
Only when it's like linked from something else. But no, it's not one of my regular sites.
I have a lot of peer pressure to be a Redditor, and I'm admittedly not a very good one. But I occasionally do hang around like the Wii U subreddit and Nintendo, and
Okay. Mostly
Game of Thrones lately. More specifically, right. The Song of Ice and Fire one, because that's where all the people who read the books live.
Okay.
But when I'm on the gaming ones, I occasionally read things, especially when I'm on like the Mass Effect or Dragon Age ones.
Okay.
I occasionally read things that kind of raise my ire a bit. Is that
spoiler?
A racist term?
Raise really? Is ire a...
Because I was
Irish.
Yeah, I was just thinking like it gets my Irish up. I was like, I'm gonna say ire instead. Then I was like, wait a minute, no, that's the same thing.
Oh, I don't know. Please tell us if it is. I don't know.
I mean, my name is Irish, so I can say that, right?
Yes.
Dang it.
But I can't. My name's Italian. So I agree. Those type of things get my pasta up.
<At any rate.
laughs> All right.
So, especially in the case of like Mass Effect, the entire trilogy as it was planned is out, and you're able to get a game called Mass Effect Trilogy for PS3 and Xbox 360, and you can get that game used. So you can pay as little as like $20 or even less for it.
Almost what it's worth. I'm doing that. I'm doing that just to get your up. Okay.
My baguette? My last name's French.
I don't know. Getting your baguette up sounds like...
Yeah, it sounds not so good.
It'd be a whole different set of conversation that I'd have to use to get your baguette up. All right.
Apart from me trying to convince you to still play this game... There was someone who started the thread asking why the DLC costs so much, and they got me curious. And
the trilogy doesn't have the DLC built in.
I don't believe so. At least not.
I thought that's because the Wii U version has something.
The Wii U version has all of the single player DLC that was out at the time.
Oh, okay.
Included in it.
Okay, so trilogy doesn't.
Or as far as I know, it doesn't.
Okay.
So someone was asking why, because they didn't pay that much for the games, they didn't feel that they should pay as much for the DLC, because it still amounted to like $100 worth, over $100 worth for like all three games DLC.
Wow.
So they were wondering like which ones were worth it. So there was a really honest conversation. It's like, you know, it does cost a lot of money. I just want to play the ones that are worthwhile.
Yeah.
But then there were a lot of people coming in there going, oh, well, you know, I don't see why I have to pay so much money for this game when I spent like $7 for it or something. And
yeah.
And I was just like, you know, I paid for each of these games full price when they first came out, like at $180.
Yeah.
And so proportionally paying for the DLC was fine, because in each case for each game it was less. But because they paid like what? Like $8 a piece for the game, not even like seven, $6.60 whatever a piece for the game.
Yeah.
That you know, paying $10 for like one piece of DLC would be too much. So I mean, I guess is this something that we should be upset about, or should I be more upset that the DLC scheme exists in the first place? That
Yeah, I mean that's the point we got to make. I think $10 for DLC already, regardless of how much you pay for it, is ridiculous. But I mean,
I feel bad because we flip flop, or at least I flip flop a lot,
okay,
on how I feel about DLC on this show.
Yeah, I think so.
Our first episode was about how it's going to lead to a digital apocalypse where there's no more retro.
Mm-hmm. And it will.
But that being unless said, I still own a lot of DLC.
Yeah, I know you do. I don't know why I even hang out with you anymore.
I mean, it's not going to go away. I mean, you can make a stand and be like, I won't buy any DLC until they include all that stuff on the disc and not buy the paywall.
That's me. Unless it's $7.
Unless it's $7.
For like the whole shebang.
So all right. So I guess we should talk about a little bit about the philosophy behind DLC, which is it's sort of a hedge.
Screw the customer.
It's sort of a hedge against
good programming.
Good night, everybody.
Sorry. Okay. I'll stop. I'll stop. Start again.
Oh my goodness. All right. So to take the devil's advocate's position.
Okay.
Admittedly,
go ahead.
It's a hedge for the publisher. Yeah. And I guess to some extent, the actual developer, against, used game sales, for which they get no money. Yeah. So if you get a game for free or cheap as free, you can still charge X dollars for some content that you can only get through their servers and through a certain service. And then the publisher actually sees some money from, a copy of the disc changing hands. Yeah.
And it also increases the tail of a game because there's a tremendous amount of money being invested into making the initial game because you have to get the new engine made and the story and all the character models. But creating it's almost like some of the DLC is really like almost creating a sequel.
Mm.
I mean, it's definitely more of an expansion pack, but I mean, they used to sell expansion packs. Do you remember? For certain games, like Flight Simulator had, you could load up new cities and things like that. Or Populous had a very popular expansion set with new levels and things. So, I mean, it's not an unheard of
Civ
concept.
5.
I guess, yeah.
Those are all things that you could buy physically, though, at least back in the day. Or Sims, oh my God.
Sims, yeah, the Livin' Large set and the whatever, the... I don't know. Drinking, talking gibberish set.
So I mean, you mentioned the Wii U version of Mass Effect 3 having the DLC on there.
Yeah.
And like, does it become okay when you get a version of the game like a complete edition? Like that's happening a lot in the PS4 right now, or the Xbox One, like Tomb Raider and Injustice have complete editions.
Well, I mean, with a lot of games, I just will wait for the Game of the Year edition.
Right.
Because it'll include everything, you know, and usually at either the same price or a lower price.
Right, yeah.
Sometimes they do have incredibly ugly covers, though, which
that,
I don't
that
like.
That is true.
But, I mean, I think that's intentional because, you know, you want people to buy the game when it first comes out. The Game of the Year edition is gravy. It's making money after you've already made money off the game, but like no one's going to release that version first. Or in fact, they won't even mention that they're going to get an edition like that because people like me will wait. I don't know. If the Wii U version of Mass Effect 3 included all the downloadable content for Mass Effect 3, that includes the multiplayer stuff and I think there's some even single player stuff that never got it.
That's true.
Yeah.
Because that game did come out while the DLC was still being developed. There's a whole thing about they made the expanded ending that they weren't planning on doing, which pushed back their plans for the actual first player DLC.
Yep.
That's a whole other story.
So, I don't know. I mean, I know why publishers do it. And in some cases, I think it might actually be acceptable.
Wow.
Okay, I know. Okay, one of my favorite games of all time is Valkyria Chronicles. I know I've talked about it a lot. for the PS3. And they had expansion there that added new missions. Quite a few. And like since the game was basically made up of missions, you know what I mean?
Mm.
That was the game. It was basically adding a couple hours of extra play to the game that actually logically flowed within the story.
Sure.
And the DLC was $4. Maybe four or $5. It was very reasonable. And it was made after the game had not long been released, but had been released for a while. So it didn't seem like the DLC was stuff that was held back from the full game.
Mm-hmm.
So much DLC feels like it was meant to be in the game to begin with, and they just took it out so that they could sell it later and just released an incomplete product. So many things feel... But this one actually felt like it was a side story to the game, you know?
Oh, absolutely. If anyone plays Dragon Age Awakening feels like a high-level content ad. Like if Dragon Age is like an MMO for a single player, so I guess it's one M, an MO, you need to play, I guess you didn't need to play the original game. I think you have to own the original game for it to work. Yeah. But you could buy a physical disc for that too, which makes me feel better about owning it. But also, it's like very much almost like a sequel, in fact, in some ways, because it improves the engine. It adds a lot of story, especially for a story-based game. And I'm sure it was its own development cycle apart from making the main game, right? Because it gives it a longer tail.
And I mean, I can, if I feel that I've gotten my full $60 value out of the game, and then they have some DLC which extends the game in a meaningful way,
right?
I guess I could see myself. It's just the problem I have with DLC is that is such an exception to the rule.
Maybe it's just the games I play. But I feel like that a lot of the problems that people have, and like you and I specifically have had with DLC, aren't as much problems as they used to be. Minus the whole digital aspect, which is still absolutely a problem.
Yeah.
But I don't tend to buy DLC where I feel like, I mean, I have a lot of it, and I don't feel like I have anything that's unnecessary.
I mean, there were so many complaints about Infamous, because the DLC for the Wii U was so delayed from the other versions.
Oh, yeah.
Not Infamous, sorry. Not Infamous.
Injustice.
Injustice, that's it.
Yeah, you probably heard a lot of that from me.
Yeah, and reading game forums as well. But, I mean, but the thing is, for me, that wasn't the problem with Injustice. The problem with Injustice was that it seemed that there was more DLC than actual included content in a $60 game.
Mm.
For me, it just seemed like they should have delayed the game and put a lot of that into the game. I think it would have sold a lot better, because it just felt, I don't own the game, but without any DLC, does it feel to you like it is a complete experience?
Yeah, I think so, because there were only five DLC characters, and there was a pretty complete roster in there.
But there was tons of DLC, though.
Well, most of it was skin packs.
Oh, okay.
And there's like a lot of stuff that you could unlock, and I don't think there was any overlap between paying to unlock some. Well, there's like a little bit. All right, I take it back. They did this weird thing where there was like a patch to the game that would come with a DLC character, and that came with a costume update. So if you got like the Zod character DLC, then it came with like the Man of Steel skins.
Okay.
For instance, you know, most of the DLC that you could pay for, and it wasn't that expensive.
Yeah.
Just quantity wise was just extra skin packs from like different comic book series, like Superman Red Sun or Flashpoint or New 52 or things like that. But yeah, there were only like five actual characters, and there wasn't any additional story as much as this game had a story, even though I think it was the best fighting game story of any fighting game ever.
Okay. So for you, I just saw the sheer amount of it, and I was adding it up. The way I see it, if you have a game where the deal where to own full DLC costs more than the original cost of the game, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think it was about maybe like a touch more to own everything, but they did release for the next gen consoles the complete Ultimate Edition for like $60.
But I mean, and that's I think that gets back to your original point though. When a game's so cheap that the digital content costs many times more than the game itself,
right.
it seems to devalue it because you've got a huge chunk of content you get very cheap, and then the additional content costs so incredibly much more. Frankly, I think with a game like Mass Effect Trilogy, now that it's down to what, like, yeah, $20 or something, they should make it free.
I mean, I guess the right thing to have done would have been to add most or all of the DLC to Trilogy. Maybe they had two choices, right? They could have released those games individually again with the DLC, or they could release Trilogy with none of it. And
I think they should have made it a premium release. Like, have it a really nice, like, steel case or something, like they did with the Metroid Prime Trilogy. And charge like $80-$90 for it, but have all the DLC.
But still, you know, it's like they don't have these additions for, say, like the 360 for Injustice and Tomb Raider.
Yeah, I suppose.
So if you get it for those platforms, you still have to pay for the DLC. But if you get it for like PS4, because it's an incentive to like buy the new console, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know how much of a model this is they're going to follow in future years. But like my opinion with Mass Effect, for instance, is like you were saving so much money because that is easily like just one of those games I think is worth at least $20, at least. Yeah. And like my opinion on the matter was like you're paying pennies on the dollar to what I paid per game. And if you were to spend $10 on like, you know, like the one DLC someone in this thread thinks is like essential, that's not, I mean, percentage wise, that's more than you paid for an individual game, but it's just $10 for crying out loud. You know,
but this is coming from a massive Mass Effect fan, though.
Right, I mean, but I just feel like if the game gave you that much enjoyment, then it's not much to pay for a little bit more.
Well, I suppose. I mean, that's the very thing. But I mean, we're living in an age where games are expected to be this certain amount of cost. You know,
and I can't argue with that because a lot of my Wii U purchases are a digital and under like $8.
Yeah. I guess it goes into one of the few types of downloadable content or additional content that I'm okay with. I am somewhat only if the price is right though, but I am somewhat okay with episodic games.
Yes.
Like Telltale stuff. But that's because your base, because all the episodes together usually equal about the price of a game.
Right.
I think that's why I'm okay with it.
Right.
Because each episode is like $10.
Yeah. So that's that. My first exposure to that was playing Back to the Future.
That was your first Telltale game.
Mm-hmm. I own the entire Sam and Max set. Yeah. That's because I got it on this like huge ridiculous sale. It might have been a Humble Bundle. I'm not sure.
Well, they were having a blowout sale about a couple of years ago too, where I just got everything of theirs for like $70.
Yeah. I think I mentioned on the past Pile of Shame that I only have downloaded the first of the Sam and Max episodes and haven't played any of them yet.
I have physical copies of all the Telltale games.
That is
how obsessed I am. Because they had a wonderful deal. You buy all the episodes, and for $5 extra, they'll send you a disc.
Oh, wow.
In a DVD case.
Okay. Yeah.
So I every time I'd buy a whole set. You had to wait till the series was done, you know, because it was they got produced after, you know, a whole series was done. But, like, I bought Back to the Future. And, you know, all the episodes come as they're released. And at the end, I got a disc.
All right.
Yeah. And that way I was able to play them as they were being made. But now I'm assured that I'll have them for the future, too. So, like, it was a total win-win. Telltale, Telltale, you have cracked the Vink code for how you can sell digitally to me.
Right on.
But yeah, I mean, I'm okay. I'm okay with that.
Okay, because, so go ahead. Go ahead.
No. Go right ahead.
So what is the best model then? Because like bundling up everything into like one disc release, like mm-hmm. Game of the Year edition or Championship edition or whatever the heck they want to call it.
Yeah.
Great for the consumer, but totally defeats the purpose of having made DLC in the first place, which was to, not totally, because it's like you said, part of it is it's a different development cycle.
Yep.
And you know, from what I know of talking to game developer friends, like it literally is like a separate budget and like a separate effort.
Oh yeah.
Well, it does depend, but like, yeah.
On disc DLC was obviously in the original budget.
That's not necessarily true, apparently.
What?
Yeah, so
on disc DLC, it's already done when they ship the product.
Well, okay, sort of, but we're in this realm now where like there's like day one patches. You know, okay. so what can happen is that something they know they're developing that doesn't have to go gold, as it were. They can put like assets on the disc that's going to be used by the DLC. But those assets can be either updated, you know, with a game patch or whatever, or replaced entirely if need be once the development for the DLC is finished. But they don't have to have like a complete full download because there's size limits on services like Xbox Live.
But a lot of these are just unlocks. A lot of these are
right. Unlocks. Well, originally they were like, you know, like Street Fighter Cross Tekken was a notorious recent example. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, yeah, maybe no. But a lot of these are done with disc right. ships. You know, right. I mean, some of them are just reusing assets, and I'm sure there's exceptions to every rule. But like that's dirty in my mind.
Right.
You know, I don't like that because it was something that was done when the product shipped that they only held back for the express purpose of milking out extra money. You know.
Yeah, and to my understanding, there is a belief that there's only a certain amount of content that only should be charged for so much, and like anything more you do, they want to charge more for games, but in America at least, it's pretty much unheard of to deviate from the $60 price model, even like what, three generations later now, or two generations since it got locked in at 60.
No, 60 is this started with the Xbox 360.
Didn't start with the Xbox?
No. Xbox games were $50.
Oh, it has just been two generations. You're right. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, in Japan, games are able to be all different kinds of prices.
Oh, yeah. Final Fantasy 13 was $100.
So I don't know why America is different that way. Yeah, but I wouldn't buy it.
Well, everything's expensive in Japan, though. Just like everything's ridiculously expensive in Japan. But the thing is, you have a vibrant, active, non being ostracized by game developers used market.
Right. Yeah.
In Japan, the used market will drive the prices down so quickly and so extremely. Like Final Fantasy 13 was $100 when it came out. But 3 months later, you could get it for $50. And 4 months later, you could get it for like $20. And now you can pick up a copy for $10. You know, right. The market brought it down to a realistic level where anybody, you know, in Japan, if you want to play a game, you either for the people who it's important to play it day one, there's a price. For the people who it's important to play it later, there's a price. And I think that's a better model in my opinion. For you, okay. A new Mass Effect game is going to release, Mass Effect 4, and it is going to include the full game and what would normally make up a three or four expansions. Okay? Mm-hmm. It's a much, much larger game. Is that worth $100 to you?
I think so.
Yeah.
But that's what the knowledge, like you're saying, it doesn't happen as aggressively in the US, but over time, these games do end up getting marked down, unless you're, you know, Nintendo, and then you never mark it down.
Yeah. Which, Nintendo, you should probably do that.
I mean, I feel really bad because I pay like $15 for BioShock Infinite. I still haven't played it.
Yep.
But that's what it took for me to buy it.
The developer going out of business.
Yeah. Had I only known.
But I mean, and that's the thing, though. The people have, and you see, it can add a long tail to a successful game, but at the same point, a game that is not successful will just never be completed. Like, right. If a developer believes that the whole story will be told through some DLC and they're kind of holding that back, or, you know, there's some ideas that maybe we can put this in the game. No, we'll save it for later for the DLC, you know. And the game flops, the game's never finished. Video games are, I know it's a different medium than anything else. I know it's completely different. But what other medium could you have something like DLC in? Like you couldn't release a movie and then have some more scenes. I mean, you'll get an extended cut later on.
Wait. You've bought a DVD before, right?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. That's nothing but extra stuff.
Yeah, that's my Game of the Year edition.
So, I mean, that's the comparison right there. Right? Like, you go into the theater, you pay, like, you know, $15 or whatever to see it day one. And then you wait however many months, and you get your Blu-ray, ultraviolet, DVD, digital, whatever version for like $30 that you can watch forever and ever. And it's got all this extra content on there.
But the problem is if we want to bring that comparison further, it would be click here, pay $10, and Luke shot first. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? The thing is, the experience you have when you see it in the theater is complete. And maybe you have a director's cut later, and I'd compare that to the Game of the Year editions, you know, which has some additional content. But, you know, it's...
Well, Marvel movies. Do you own any discs of Marvel movies?
I think I have Iron Man.
What they've been doing is they have been including like these shorts.
Okay.
That expand on like the whole Marvel Universe thing that they're doing.
Hmm.
So you have your main movie. It doesn't really expand on the movie itself per se, but was it Thor: The Dark World? I think had like the Peggy Carter Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. short.
Okay.
I might be getting that wrong, which disc it was on, but you know, that was an expansion, as it were, to Captain America. And now it's going to be made into a TV series.
Okay.
But they've been doing that as like as an added bonus. It's like here is more content from our cinematic universe that, you know, it literally is an extra thing. Like they didn't plan for it. It's not like it was cut from the movie and they held it back.
Really?
Well,
they were probably filmed at the same time. I can't imagine they brought in the cast again to do these things and rebuilt sets. Oh, no, they were definitely done at the same time.
Darn it. Logic. But these after
credits. But actually, that supports your point better than mine.
I suppose. These after credit scenes, like, you know, are like often directed by other people, like not the ones who do the main film. Like the one after Thor, again, was... done by the guy who directs Guardians of the Galaxy, because it was a tie into that movie.
Okay.
For instance, you know, that happens a lot. So I think it's creeping into other media.
It is. And oh man, I'd hate to buy a book and then have to paste in pages to get. Yeah, it's okay. Print.
Do you read the Game of Thrones stuff, the Song of Ice and Fire stuff?
No.
Okay, so
watch. I've been meaning to. I just don't have time to read.
Those books are long too. The later ones are in excess of 1,000 pages apiece.
Yeah,
And there's all these appendices and stuff like that as well. But there's a series of little novellas called Duncan.
Yeah, I heard about that. Yeah.
Okay, but they're only part of like these larger fantasy collections.
Yeah.
So if you want more of this story, you have to buy these collections, or you have to some of them have been turned into graphic novels, to my understanding. But there's no collected edition. It's like, why can't I just get this book? You know, why, you know, but that's in literary world how this is kind of happening now. It's like there's this story that happens like 80 years or so before the main Game of Thrones story that is still being built on. It's still being told.
Thanks, Obama.
I'm still trying to think of a good example for like what's the happy medium, no pun intended, for the video game stuff. Like what can like satisfy the consumer's preferences while still making sure the publisher gets enough money to make it worth their while?
I think it's very hard because the consumer has clearly moved into this. Well, I don't know if it's the consumer has moved into it or the game companies themselves, but there is definite advantages right now for companies to make AAA titles, these really high budget, high risk titles. I forgot who it was, but someone was quoted recently saying that this year there's going to be about one third of as many games as in previous years, but they're going to have three times the budget.
Oh, yikes.
I mean,
is because that 'cause next gen or what?
Because of next gen, because people are expecting these event games, you know, the next Call of Duty, the next, you know, all we have right now is these incredibly expensive AAA titles and indie, like the middle class has been cut out.
Okay,
you know,
that's true of a lot of things. Hoyo.
Yes, it is. But I mean, it's completely true. We have these incredibly high budget, high profile titles, which one flop can bankrupt a company. And then we have indie titles, which are no budget, but are unfortunately still fairly ignored by people other than us. But there used to be this whole second tier of games that were just, you know, middling. And I mean, Nintendo's still making stuff like that, but nobody cares. But I mean, look at the PlayStation 2. There were so many games and so many different levels of, and some of my favorite games fell into that middle category because they were more experimental. They didn't have to tick off every single checkbox, but at the same time, they had budgets enough that they, you know, were supported by a major studio. And those those made the industry more sustainable. But like, we've moved into this one where every game has to be a hit, so that the advertising budgets are massive. And the thing is, the games cost so incredibly much to make that the DLC is the only safety net publishers have. So with the current model we have, DLC makes sense for publishers, but I mean, maybe I'm living in a dream world, but I would very much like a return to lower budget types of games where there's not so much risk and not so much investment that DLC becomes a necessity.
Yeah, and I think you hit upon something, especially because we were talking about Irrational Games and everything shutting down. Like how is it possible such a wildly successful game doesn't make the publisher enough money? And that's definitely like a whole topic by itself.
I mean, everybody knew BioShock. You know, it was a massive hit, a gigantic hit. And that the next game in the series, which was still a bestseller, wasn't as crazy popular as the publisher needed it to be to break even. Nuts.
I think what you're saying about the smaller scopes and smaller games is really the way that I sort of tailor my buying habits now. Because my Wii U purchases are like largely indie titles that don't cost lot. Didn't cost a lot to develop, but they're just as fun as a game that might have cost five times as much to develop.
Don't tell developers that. They're gonna be real sad.
Well, they need to hear it because they're going out of business. So they can either listen to me or they can die.
Famicom Dojo, you can either listen to us or can die.
Well, that's motivation right there, but isn't it?
Frankly, and I know this is terrible, and anybody working for a game company, I don't want anybody to lose a job. That's right. And it's a bad time to be without a job right now. but not referring to the entities working at, which are made of many, many good people. But some of these companies might have to die. Some of these companies might have to go, you know, this business model won't sustain itself. You know, there's going to be a second video game crash, but it's not going to end video games. You know what I mean?
No, all the major companies
could go out of business tomorrow and games would still survive. They just survive in a different way.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think publishers are going to go out of business. It's just the developer, the studios.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. The publishers have a lot of protection. But you know what? We've opened up the gaping wounds of three different possible topics. So
no kidding.
I think we should cut our losses right here and move into future retro.
See, so we're already planning our podcast DLC for you guys.
There we go. Yes, we are.
We don't have enough time and budget for so much topic.
You know what? But after this podcast ends, we might stay on the line and actually record some of it right now. You just can't hear it until later.
I don't tell them that.
Oh, sorry. Whoops. Ooh.
So future retro. Yes. What do you have for this week?
Right. My future retro this time is a title that didn't get nearly enough appreciation. One so much that when I suggested it, my partner in crime here had never heard of it.
Yeah,
that title is Ghost Trick.
Yeah, what is that?
It is a game that was released on the DS pretty late in the life of the DS. The 3DS might even have been out by that point. I'm not sure. It was released by Capcom, and it's made by the team that was responsible for Phoenix Wright, which brought it on my radar. But it's a very different type of game.
Oh yeah.
It is a kind of a murder mystery because you're trying to figure out, but here's the catch. You're trying to figure out who killed you.
What?
Yeah, you're dead. You're a ghost in this game, but you can possess people and objects. And so you're moving around as this spirit, trying to gather clues and get into people's heads to do kind of like inside brain interviews to try to figure out who was your killer.
Well, wasn't there a game on GameCube like this?
Geist? Yeah. Yeah, but that was like a first-person shooter. This is much more of an adventure game with mousetrap elements.
Mousetrap elements?
Have you ever played the board game Mousetrap?
Yeah.
Kind of the Rube Goldberg
type. I've also seen Lost.
Yeah. Kind of the Rube Goldberg type devices where, you know, you hit the thing and the ball rolls down and it knocks this other thing. You possess objects and you set up things like this in order to make things happen because you can't directly, you know, you can't directly like levitate objects or things. You can only just, you can like switch on a light.
Okay.
Or you can turn on a fan. You know, you can do these little things, but you have to affect your environment to, in some places, prevent another character from getting murdered.
Oh, nice.
It's really, really cool, and it has probably the best 2D sprite animation I have ever seen in a portable title.
Wow, okay.
And some of the best I've ever seen, ever. It's fantastic. And it sold like
tens and tens of copies.
Oh yeah. I mean, I didn't buy it when it came out. I actually got it when it was released for the iPhone.
Oh man.
Four. There's that magic number. Oh no. I've just backed up the whole point of this show. The game was free, but you bought the chapters.
Okay.
And so I paid a total of about $15 for the game. $10, $15? I don't remember. $10 or $15 for the game. But oh my gosh, that's DLC right there. Because the game was free, like the first couple missions. Nah, I don't know. That's more like episodic.
I'm gonna bring this up at the end of the show because I'll just wait for it.
Okay. But anyway, but I liked it so much that I went back and I bought the DS version because it's easier to play on the DS.
Okay.
Than on the iPhone, but it's a great game. It's a fantastic game. And unfortunately, since it sold so bad, I don't think there's ever going to be a sequel or another game like it, which is a crying shame. Everybody play Ghost Trick. It takes a little while to get into the first couple chapters because it's weird. There's no game like it. So you don't have anything to compare your experience to, but stick with it. It's one of the best games. It's one of the best games
there. Wow. Wow. Okay. Mine is not that good of a game, but I thought it was theme appropriate. And okay. I really enjoyed it because it does harp on the more negative aspects of DLC. And that is an independent game. You can get on Steam called DLC Quest.
DLC Quest?
Have you heard of this?
I think I've heard of it in reference, but please tell me about it.
Okay. It's a platformer. Everything that you can do in the game is purchased as DLC from in-game characters. So you're not really buying DLC. It's just like in-game currency. And so you start, I think you can only like move in one direction, I think, or something like that. There's no animation. You can't jump.
Sounds great.
So the first thing that you got to do is get DLC to like move like left or something, and then you like get like the animation add-on pack so that you can actually your character sprite actually moves when it moves back and forth, and you can jump, and then you start getting really crazy things like game breaking things to get to the end. So like you can't even get to the final boss without buying some DLC. kind of thing. It's really clever. It's a really nice tongue-in-cheek commentary on the whole DLC thing, and it's really really short. I think I probably beat it in less than an hour.
That sounds amazing.
Right, it's available for Steam. I don't know if it's Steam Play, so I don't know if you can play it on I'm gonna look it up right now because why not.
Is there a Mac version?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to figure out.
Well, whichever.
I might even just buy it right now if it's not too expensive. Yeah, there's a Mac version. Yeah, it's $3. So $3. It's worth every penny. I mean, it's...
Well, you know what? I'll think about it, but just the word Steam brings me to my pile of shame.
Oh, okay.
My pile of shame is Steam. No, my pile of shame is... Humble Indie Bundles.
Which one?
All of them. Because I've bought all of them.
Oh, no.
I buy them every time they come up. Every time. Including like the weird ones, like the music bundles. Because they're cheap. And I'm not one of those people who puts a penny down and gets the games. You know, I always do I always beat the average.
Okay.
You know, because it's good. It's for charity. I appreciate that. I like what they're doing, and it's still cheap. You know, you can usually beat the average for about $7-$8, and you're basically paying $1 a game after all said and done. But right now, in my Steam queue, I think I have 50 to 100 games, somewhere around there. You know,
yikes.
And of those, I've played Braid. Oh, Braid. Mm. Okay. You know, and I've played a few of them, you know, World of Goo, Braid, you know, a few of the, you know, more high profile ones. But there's so many that I haven't even installed yet. There's so many that I don't know when I will ever get around to. And so like this DLC, the game sounds wonderful, but even if it was given to me for free, I don't know if I'd ever have a chance to play it.
Oh, no.
Like, I just have so many games in there right now, and good ones, too, because I love indie games. I really, really do. I've got the whole Trine series.
Oh, sure.
But really, I find it so much more enjoyable to play on the Wii U gamepad.
Right. At first, the ultimate version.
Exactly. So even though I already had it on my Humble, you know, through Humble Bundles, I bought it on the Wii U because after playing the demo, I'm like, this is how I would like to experience this game.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. The thing is, I will continue to buy Humble Bundles, though. I'm compulsive about it. I can't miss them. But,
oh, dear.
You know, I have the Double Fine Bundle, which has some really large games in it, you know, like Brutal Legend, which I already have on other systems, but Costume Quest and I have like four different versions of Psychonauts that I've bought. I have the PlayStation 2 version on physical disc. I have the Mac version, which I bought through the Mac App Store. I have a one that I bought from Steam before there was a Humble Indie Bundle that had it, which I already bought. So yeah, I've got four different licenses to this game right now, and I've yet to beat it. But you know, that's so my pile of shame is, and this is very shameful. I don't even like to log into Steam because it guilts me. I'm there and I'm like, it Steam's like, would you like to install 57 games that you, and I'm like, no, I just want to play a little World of Goo and then I'll see you later. You know?
Oh no. I have that on my Wii, by the way.
So like, I don't, so like, yeah, yeah. So like DLC Quest sounds great. Part of me went $3, gonna buy that. And then I'm like, but if I do that, I have to log into Steam. And then the Humble Bundles will be looking at me with their doe eyes.
Jeez. All right, so confession time.
Okay.
This isn't my pick for the week, but I bought the first Amnesia Fortnite. And never installed it, never got the code for it.
Yeah. I buy it because I like to support Telltale. But they don't make a Mac version of that, and I've never played them. No.
So mine is Shadow of the Colossus.
Ooh. Can I change mine? I want mine to be Shadow of the Colossus.
All right, let me go first.
Okay.
So I got a PS2 really late. It was like 2004. I got one that was like on clearance that had like the modem installed in it and everything.
Is that partially because of me and Ben?
Yes.
Making you not buy one.
I just had lots of friends who owned their own, and there were a lot of great games like Frequency and everything. And I was leaving college. Like, you know, I was finally graduating. Yep. You were already,
in Japan, probably
in Japan, too. I think, you know, Ben was graduating too. It's like, I had no one else to mooch off of anymore. So I had to get my own PS2, and you know, there were a lot of like original PlayStation games that I wanted to play. So I finally got one, and so like Katamari came out like really soon after that, I think. So I was glad I had it. But you know, Shadow of the Colossus was one of the games that looked amazing, and I picked it up, and I got through, I want to say like four or five of the Colossi, and then something happened that I just didn't play it. And this is well before the Xbox 360 came out. And I often blame that for me stopping to play games, but I'm not really sure what happened here. Maybe the minimalism got to me eventually. And I was just like, oh, I don't want to have to figure out where the next one is or something. And maybe it's just because I was moving and starting my life, like as a productive member of society, like grinding my soul down to the nub, but I wasn't playing this game a lot anymore, and I haven't really picked it up again until a few weeks ago. Okay. I actually plugged in my PS2, got my nice CRT retro station set up.
Nice, that's how to do it.
Yeah. Right, and I plugged it in. Then I discovered that you can play this game in 16:9 and in progressive scan.
Yeah,
but I don't have the cables for that. So
okay.
But I was just like, oh, it's amazing. But yeah, so here I am in 4:3 standard def, and it's still, you know, it's a little grainy, but it's still a really nice looking game. And
oh yeah, it's definitely a bridge gap game. Yeah,
I love it. And I know there's an HD version out. I'm sure that I have a system that can play it. But nah, I'm gonna play the PS2 one. Although my memory card didn't want to load at first, so that was a little scary. But you know, 30 minutes, I ran around the world a little bit trying to refamiliarize myself with the controls, found the next Colossus, and beat him pretty easily. But you know, I just didn't have a lot of time, so like the 30 minutes was all I had. But there's like, I have like 10 to go still, and I was just like, forget it. So it's still on my pile of shame.
That game is beautiful, and I think I beat the first three or four Colossi, I don't know.
Mm.
But it looked like a game that was setting up some kind of epic story, but there's not really much story to it.
Right.
And I think that's the thing that got me. I wanted to know more. And I know the game is a very artistic game, and it's all about nuance and things. But I don't know. I kind of wanted a story to smack out in front of me, you know, about what was going on and stuff. Because I liked the concept a lot.
Right.
But,
me too.
But, like, the main character, I didn't feel any connection to him.
I was more impressed that a lot of it seems so similar to, like, Zelda 2.
Zelda 2?
Yeah.
Oh, I suppose. The princess being, from the beginning, like, lying there, you know, you have to revive her by going through long map things to get to bosses which are really hard to beat, some of which might have horse heads. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you had the seven it's a little bit of a stretch, but you know, the fact that it was so minimalist was that you could sort of bolt on things like that.
I suppose. Yeah, I never really saw it like that. I really should beat that game though. I really enjoyed playing it. I'm not actually sure why I stopped.
Well, it does lead to a lot of hand cramping.
Yeah, I suppose. It's basically just, yeah, like what, 12, 13 intense boss battles separated by a lot of wandering around.
Right. I'm sure there's a metaphor on there somewhere.
But I mean, that's the same could be said for No More Heroes.
Oh, no.
No More Heroes is basically some amazing boss battle separated by pretty dull looking motorbike sequences. You know. But it's still one of my favorite games. So, I mean, yeah.
So before we go, I wanted to mention something that occurred to me while we were talking, which is that I didn't play this. What is it? Rusty's Baseball or whatever it's called.
Oh yeah.
So I mean that's definitely a different DLC model where like the main game is free.
Haggling, right?
Right. Yeah. So like you have to haggle with like Rusty's kids or something. Rusty or his kids to get these mini games. Yeah. And which you could easily pay like what, $40 or something if you've got everything. But the game makes it really hard for you to pay full price.
Well, and the better you do in the game, or like the more you've explored, or the better connections you have with people through various things. Yeah, you can get everything. Like you can also
$16, I think, is what I heard.
Yeah, for like $16. Yeah. So that's a very interesting concept.
Right, I want to try it out, and I haven't played it yet, so I didn't feel like I could talk about it. But
I think just for research for this show, you should, because we're all about that kind of.
Right, I've heard lots of good things from the 4CR guys. So,
yeah, I'm
especially Eden. You know who you are.
I thought that was a very, very interesting concept in DLC right there, and I'm not sure if I'm totally behind it, but I think it's not a step in the wrong direction.
Right.
I'm not sure if I'm going to go as far as to say it's a step in the right direction, but I don't think it's a step in the wrong direction.
And as much as I like free to play is this whole thing, which we've already talked about, which sort of is like DLC in a way, but Plants vs. Zombies 2.
Yeah.
Has an interesting model for that as well, which I haven't played because it was free to play. Oh, what else? Robot Unicorn Attack 2 is a largely free to play experience, but you know, again, subjects for another day. So if you want to tell us what you think about DLC or what you think a proper balance would be, or if you have played Rusty's Baseball or whatever the heck that game is called, you can leave us a message. You can call us at 608-492-1923. Or leave us a message at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. We're on YouTube. We do a show sometimes.
Ooh. I've been meaning to watch that.
Right.
It's on my pile of shame.
I've been meaning to make them. also we are free on iTunes. We can also leave a review of the show and rate us, which every little bit helps there, and we're also free on Stitcher Radio.
And if you're listening to this and you are a developer and you are currently making DLC or using a DLC model for what you're making, Please come talk to us. We would like to talk with you, actually. In fact, if you'd like to even be on the show, talk to us, because I would love to hear it from someone within the system about what happens there, and maybe we can even understand it a little bit better.
For sure. Oh, and before we forget, we are rapidly approaching episode 100. So if any of you listeners out there have your stories about this Famicom life, what's the topic again?
Growing up gamer.
Yes, growing up gamer.
I don't know if someone has already used that title for some, that might be the title of someone else's podcast. If so,
too we're bad.
Sorry. If you're the person who makes Growing Up Gamer, please get in touch with us. We'd like to talk with you about why we stole your name.
And send us, we should also submit something for our episode.
Yeah, please submit something for our episode. But I mean, we're just talking about some memories you've had about, you know, how games have affected your life. And it can be anything. You can write, if you don't feel comfortable recording your voice, write us something and we will have one of our celebrities read it for you.
Oh dear.
You can write a song, interpretive dance, which will be very difficult to get on the podcast, but we'll see what we can do. Anything you'd like to submit, we have enough content that we can produce ourselves. But we
just want you guys involved, because we usually do a fan appreciation episode. Yeah.
We think the episode would be a lot stronger if we got many submissions from different people. So, I mean, we don't absolutely need them, but I think the show will be better the more people submit it. And even if you don't think you have an interesting story to tell, just to bring a variety of experiences into it, just record something, a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, you know, any little bit helps, to just bring a wide variety of experiences into this.
And then again, you can call us at 608-492-1923 to leave a clip there, or if it's short enough, email as well to podcast@famicomdojo.tv.
All right.
Okay. All right. So I guess, speaking of Reddit, not gaming is also a story about growing up gamer, right? Because if you weren't able to play games and wanted to, or you had like a story to tell, like, you know, your family was poor and had to go to a friend's house, like, you know, Zach and Adam and Ernie did for us a few episodes ago.
Yeah, that's fine too. Yeah.
Those are great stories. And totally within the scope of what we're trying to do.
Yeah. I think I involved 2 years of begging for me to get my original Nintendo. Yeah.
See, just condense it into 2 minutes and we're all good.
Yep.
All right. So I guess until next week, the dojo is
free for the first 10 minutes. And then you can either get the second 10 minutes for $2, or you can get the full hour put together as a pack for only $4.99.
I think podcasts actually do that. Looking at you, Dan Savage.
Oh, Dan Savage.
Famicom Dojo.
Okay, hooking.
Do you want to bring this one in? This is my topic too, wasn't it?
That's your topic, yeah.
Shoot. I guess I have to now. Okay.